Right, welcome back to Gary's Economics. Today we are doing what is hopefully the final one-off special of Gary's Economics this year. We're going to explain everything you need to know about the upcoming budget and asking and answering the rather sensationalistic question, is this budget the end of British democracy? Okay, I don't like to do videos on the budget, and at the moment, if possible, I don't like to do videos at all. But this is going to be a massive moment politically in the UK. I think it's really, really educational economically. I think what's happening in this budget is going to be a really great example of basically everything I've tried to basically educate you about on economics this year and the most recent years. So I want to go through it. A big thing that will happen in this budget is that the government will raise taxes significantly. Some people might try to say that this is what Gary wanted, this is a wealth tax. So we want to make it clear why they're raising taxes and why it's not a wealth tax. All right, so the first thing is the government is going to really quite significantly raise taxes in this budget. This is kind of crazy because they came in promising not to raise taxes. They're already very unpopular. They're going to raise taxes. It's going to be kind of like the political suicide of the Labour Party. Why on earth would they do this? It doesn't make any sense. So if you watched my video, I did 3 months ago, a video predicting this budget, I said that it would be a massive tax raising budget. At the time, I was sort of speaking to think tanks and trying to get some info from Labour MPs. And at the time, it looked like they were going to sort of focus those taxes on the middle class, the upper middle class, largely because sort of your average British person doesn't have anything left to tax. Since then, it looks like they might go for something a bit more broad. There are a lot of whispers of raising the basic rate of income tax, which would hit everyone. But now it looks like we're going to get what people are calling this sort of smorgasbord of tax rises. So when the government was campaigning, they promised not to raise income tax, national insurance on employees, or VAT, which are the three big taxes. If you want to raise a lot of money, these are the three taxes that you would normally look at. There were rumours they were going to break the promise on income tax. Now it looks like they're not going to do that. As a result, since they want to raise a lot of money, they are probably going to have to do like 25 different tax rises, all kinds of different things, some of which will be targeted on richer people, none of which, it seems, will be targeted on the very rich, and some of which, such as freezing the thresholds on income tax, will hit predominantly poorer people. So it looks like they are going to basically raise taxes on absolutely everybody except the very rich, which is exactly the opposite of what we campaign for here. We call for tax wealth, not work. It's going to be phenomenally unpopular. I think it's probably going to be another line on the gravestone of Keir Starmer Premiership, quite possibly. I think he'll likely go. Why? Why do this crazy politically suicidal thing? So what the media is largely reporting around the question of why the UK government is raising taxes tends to focus on the fiscal rules, which are these rules which the Labour government set itself around promising to basically try and get the debt to reduce, you know, not to spend more than you raise in taxes, lots of very sensible seeming rules. And the idea is, because interest rates have risen significantly and also because UK growth has been weak, it means that if the UK government wants to keep its fiscal rules, it basically needs to significantly raise taxes or significantly reduce spending. I think the focus on fiscal rules is a little bit misleading, to be honest, because beneath the fiscal rules, and really a big motivator for these fiscal rules, is the fact that financial markets, in particular the government bond market, has been really heavily breathing down the government's neck really ever since it came into office. So I think if you want to understand why the government's doing this, you need to understand a little bit about what's going on in financial markets. So I just want to recover, I think, one of the most important videos we did this year, which is about the dynamics of the UK government debt. I think we'll flash up a link to the full video in case you want to get the details on it. But it's important to recognise that debt dynamics are really driven by the interest rate. The interest rate, which I'm going to call here R. Now, after 2008, this interest rate fell to very low levels, about 2%. And into COVID, it went all the way down to 0%. Now, if you're paying 0% interest on your debt, kind of doesn't really matter, basically, how much debt you have, because you're not paying any interest on it. But in the last few years, this has gone up to about 4.5%, or maybe even 5% on longer term debt. Now, what is important about this is, what is significant for your government debt is how big it is as a proportion of your economy. Now, your debt is fixed as a pound amount, but it goes up by your interest rate every year. And your economy increases by G, economic growth, but it also increases by I, inflation. If you have inflation, then because your debt does not go up with inflation, your economy goes up and your debt doesn't. So really what matters in terms of sustainability of your government debt is whether the interest rate is bigger than growth and inflation together. And this was not true back when interest rates are very low. Growth in this country is about 1% a year. It hasn't been significantly above that for really 20 years or so. And inflation is usually about 2 to 2.5%. At the moment, it's still a bit higher. That means we can expect the economy to grow in pound terms by about 3.5% a year. And the debt is growing by interest by about 5% a year. This means that unless growth goes up, which is unlikely, unless inflation goes up, which the Bank of England is supposed to stop, debt will basically increase and increase and increase as a percentage of the economy. And that means that unless the government does something, eventually debt will get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's unsustainable. And when financial markets look at that, they think, well, here's a government which is not long-term financially sustainable. And for that reason, they continually analyse everything the government does. And they think if the government does anything that at all deteriorates their likelihood of getting their debt paid back, they start to sell the bonds. And we've seen that a number of times in recent years. The most obvious time was the Liz Truss debacle, which was a few years ago now. But we also see the financial markets move quite significantly against this Labour government in January this year. And they even start to put a little bit of heat on just a week or so ago when the government announced it wasn't going to raise income tax. Now, we all saw what happened to Liz Truss, who, for anyone who doesn't know, is the shortest lasting prime minister, I believe, in the history of the country. The only reason she lasted more than a month is because the Queen died. Otherwise, she probably would have lasted just a couple of weeks. And Labour know that as well. In fact, Labour really capitalised on that. They put a lot of pressure on the Conservatives, saying you're fiscally irresponsible, Liz Truss blew the economy up. So of course, they are constantly terrified that the markets will do this to them. So really, financial markets are driving a lot of this Labour policy. Pretty much everything that they do is really calculated to avoid the financial markets attacking them. I think it's important to recognise that in January, we came relatively close to the financial markets taking this government down. And it was only because of one very good, very lucky low inflation number that the government survived. And the government is basically terrified that they do a budget, financial markets turn against them, the government bonds sell off, and they're forced to basically do another budget. Some people will say, and sometimes do say, like, why don't we just ignore the financial markets? And I understand that, because obviously you live in a democracy and you expect the public to determine the policy of the government, and you don't like to see financial markets dominate it. The answer to that is, if your economic policy is to constantly borrow money from financial markets, then you need to keep financial markets happy. And in a sense, this is the reason why I constantly campaign for wealth taxes. So since COVID, inequality has increased significantly. And one manifestation of that is a big transfer of wealth from the government to the very rich. And you see that in the form of significantly higher government debt and significantly higher savings from the very rich. Once you've done that, then you are then in a situation where the government, if it wants to provide things like basic services, needs to somehow get those resources back or get access to those resources from the very rich. And there's a couple of ways you can do that. But the most obvious ways are you borrow from the rich or you tax the rich. If you choose not to tax the rich, then the only way for you to get government services like the NHS, like education services, are to borrow from the rich. So basically, as long as governments refuse to tax the rich, they will be consistently entirely dependent on borrowing from the rich, which means they will need to do whatever the financial traders ask of them, because they are completely dependent on the financial traders, who are the people who decide whether or not the rich lend their money to the government. So the key here to understand why the government is raising your taxes is it's not really about fiscal rules. It is a little bit about the markets, but really what you have here is a question fundamentally about distribution. The reason I started this channel at the beginning of COVID is because I could see the distribution was going to change. I could see an enormous amount of wealth was going to go from the public and governments to the very rich. And I knew that that would lead to the kind of situation that we are in now. The government has negative wealth now. The rich have positive wealth now. Now, underneath that, what you get is a change in cash flows. And I think I'll link to our video, Flows of Wealth. Because what I want you to understand is, when you lose your wealth, and when the government loses its wealth, that is not a thing that happens in abstract. There are cash flows beneath that. So now the government is heavily in debt to the rich, and it needs to pay that interest every single year. That means that in order for the government to provide the same level of services to you, they need to tax you more. But every year, as the government pays more debt to the rich will get richer, you will get poorer, and this situation will compound and get worse. So really, what you are seeing here, it's not so much a question of government incompetence as a very obvious and natural consequence of a changing distribution. As inequality increases, as you and the government have less wealth and the rich have more wealth, the only possible way for you to get public services is for the government to tax you more, which will, of course, and bear in mind, they're using that tax to pay the interest to the rich. So it will inevitably lead to a greater wealth inequality, which will lead to greater cash flows from you to the rich. And this situation will compound and get worse and worse and worse. And it is the only way to keep the state alive without wealth taxes, is to constantly tax you more and to constantly tax the middle class more. So this kind of discourse, which we get a lot around the government taxes us so much, the government taxes us so much, we need to reduce taxes. That is inevitably what will happen if you have growing wealth inequality and you do not tax the rich. You basically have two choices here. Either you tax the rich and you get your government services, or you squeeze everybody else. This is fundamentally a problem of distribution. So that leads us to part two here, which is why not the wealth tax? So obviously, anyone who's watched the channel for a long time will know that I've been a campaigner for wealth taxes, for greater taxes on the very rich for a long time. I predicted that the government would do what it has done. I predicted the government would squeeze the middle class. I predicted that living standards would fall. I think that these things are basically unavoidable in the absence of wealth taxes. So why is this desperately unpopular government not going after the very rich? So this is an interesting question. And the last few weeks, I've been working on this documentary with Channel 4. And as a part of that, I've been going around speaking to lots and lots and lots of self-professed, phenomenally intelligent people who like to tell me why we shouldn't have wealth taxes. And I think what we have here really is a fundamental misdiagnosis of the problem. I think when Labour were coming into power, when they were campaigning for the election, I think they thought that the problem that we had in this country was a problem of corrupt and incompetent government. I think that they thought that the Conservatives were corrupt and incompetent, and there may well have been like a strong element of truth to that. But I think that they thought that that was kind of the limit of the problem. I think that they felt that once they got the sensible, mature people in charge, who they felt were themselves, like most of us do, I think that they felt the problem would resolve. But they were phenomenally naive, like I think most economists unfortunately still are, to the relatively simple fact that the wealth distribution matters. So, you know, there were lots of stories about conservative incompetence, especially during COVID, conservative corruption during COVID. But what they were a lot fewer stories about was this massive change in the wealth distribution, which I've been screaming about since the beginning of COVID. Those people who've watched the channel since the very start will remember the videos I did about the 600 billion and the 700 billion and the 800 billion, which is now over £1 trillion, which is the total amount of wealth which was transferred from the government to the very rich. I'll mention it again because I haven't spoken about it on this channel for a long time. So if you've been watching this channel for a long time, you'll remember that early on in COVID, I used to talk about the enormous amounts of money given out by the UK government. I think the first video I did was £650 billion, 650 with nine zeros. Then that became 750 billion, and that eventually became over 1 trillion, which is 1 with 12 zeros, which is a number so big, doesn't make any sense to anyone, but I think is better understood as £20,000 for every single adult in the country. So at this point, the UK government, since the beginning of COVID, has given £20,000 out for every single adult in the country, which means unless not only you, but every single adult in your household, in your family, in your friendship group, has £20,000 more money, somebody has your £20,000. I believe that this has been accumulated largely by the richest people in the country. And what that means is there's just been a massive, massive transfer of wealth, a massive change in the wealth distribution. Ordinary people are poorer, the government is much poorer, and that wealth has been accumulated by the rich. I think Labour came in, you know, and the same thing could be said of the Biden government in the US, or really basically any government that's come in the last 5 years. Governments came in thinking that as long as they're sensible, they'll be able to fix the problem, with basically nothing to say, and in reality, having never considered the fact that the wealth distribution has massively, significantly changed now. And I've used this metaphor a number of times on the channel, but I really think it is the best way to understand why our governments and our economists keep failing on the economy. This is as if you have cancer and your doctor does not know cancer exists. We have very significant increases in inequality and wealth distribution happening, especially during COVID, massively during COVID, and yet we do not have anyone in government who comes in saying, let's address that change in the wealth distribution. So then you end up in the kind of situation we're in now, where a government comes in, just thinks it can kind of like manifest its way out of a crisis through just extreme sensibleness, with absolutely no willingness to engage with the fact that the wealth distribution is bad. This is like you coming in to a game of Monopoly when everything's owned at the end, recognizing all of the properties are already owned and just being like, well, it's okay because I'm really f-ing good at Monopoly. Like, you have to address the changes in the wealth distribution. And if you don't, then you will constantly find you are paying so much money to access wealth you don't have. You are paying so much money in debt interest that you are simply constantly running out of money. And what you are seeing as running out of money is basically the fact that you don't have the f-ing resources anymore. And if you do not get the resources, then you're going to be paying everything out in order to access those resources. So really, it's a fundamental misdiagnosis of the problem and just basically a naivety about the significance of wealth. And the irony of it is, this group of people who are completely unaware about the importance that the broad public owns wealth, that the government has access to wealth, are themselves usually pretty wealthy people. So yeah, what I've sort of seen going around London and the country in the last few months is what I've started to think of as the League of Extraordinarily Smart People, which is a bunch of politicians and economists who have ideas about the economy that never consider distribution and have never had to test their ideas in the way that traders have. So they tend to believe that as long as we're sort of a bit more sensible, a bit more managerial, a bit more technical, we can get away out of this problem, crucially without ever having to tax rich people. And they, in general, they really, really, really don't want to tax rich people. And I think this is largely because they themselves are quite rich. They sit towards the top of the sort of social hierarchy in this country. They don't want to upset rich people. They're funded by rich people. But crucially, I think you have this kind of basically fundamental conservatism, which very often comes with the fact that you are in the top 1% richest people in the country. These decisions are made by people who are rich. They don't want to tax rich people because they are rich. They never have to test their ideas. They only really have to convince each other You know, if you look at the group of people, the politicians, the economists, the tax lawyers who are doing this, they're rich people. It's not difficult for them to convince each other we shouldn't tax rich people. They all tend to come from the same kind of cultural space, you know, upper middle class or wealthier people, sort of mathsy, academic-y, bean countery types. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they don't want to rock the boat or do anything that they view as wild or extreme or reckless. And crucially, what I think to you or to most ordinary people in society feels like a society drifting into poverty, falling off a cliff, collapsing, to them feels like the preserving of a perfectly decent social order. And I think the reason you have that is because a crisis of inequality feels bad for most people, but it feels phenomenally good for the top 1%. And it feels pretty good for the top 5%, because what, they are the guys who are accumulating the money. They are the guys on the other side of this. They are the guys who are getting richer. I want to flash up a little clip. It's an interview recently by Martin Wolf, who is a very prestigious Financial Times economic journalist. He's been writing for them for many, many years. And he went on Navara, which is friends of the channel. I've been on there many, many times. And he was asked, you know, what do you think's going wrong with the UK economy? And I think his answer was very clarifying, I think, about the way rich people feel about the way the economy is run.
The way I want to frame this question is, you've been at the FT since 1987. So you've been reporting on economic policy in Britain during the Thatcher years, the Major years, the Blair Brown years, all the chaos we've had since 2010, and now the Labour government. How does this Labour government, Keir Starmer, Rachel Reeves, compare to what you've reported on, what you've commented on, what you've been analysing before?
Well, I think, first of all, I think these are perfectly decent people. It's quite important because we've had some we've had one or two prime ministers in the not too distant past who I don't think were very decent people.
I've got to be honest, I kind of love this. So what you have here is, I don't know Martin Wolf's personal situation. I suspect a pretty comfortably wealthy person. Analysing a government run by, again, pretty comfortable, wealthy people. Same sort of social cohort, in a sense, as he is in now. And I think if you were to ask your average man on the street, like, how has this government done in terms of living standards, the vast majority of people would be very disappointed. They came in on a promise of not raising taxes, growing the economy. They're about to raise taxes. They've not grown the economy. Living standards are falling. And what does one of the most prominent economic journalists in the country have to say about that? These guys are perfectly decent people. And what this shows you, basically, is these guys are happy because it works for them, and because they like the country to seen by, they like the country to be run by people who look like them and sound like them and manage the country in a way that works for them. And I think that the big lesson, I think, that you need to learn from this is that these guys are not going to fix it for you. It's going to have to be your job to force the changes that you need. What most of the guys want who are rich, in their heart of hearts, is just to stay rich. And they want to stay at the top, and they want their kids to stay at the top. And that is the reason that they are blocking things like wealth taxes, because they want to stay at the top. But obviously, they can't say to themselves or each other, the reason we're blocking change is because the status quo keeps us rich. So what they say is, you know, we are perfectly decent people trying to do perfectly decent things. And what this reminds me of, since this is my last video, I'm going to indulge myself. I'm trying to get a few more literary references into the channel. This reminds me of one of my favourite books, which is a book called Candide by a French philosopher from, I think, the 1700s called Voltaire. Yeah, so this book is about the idea, which was very popular in the 1700s, that the world that we live in must be the best of all possible worlds. And this was a Christian idea that was popular in the 1800s. And there's a logic to it, which is, we're all Christian, obviously. God is a good guy. He's all powerful. He's all knowing. And he created the world like this. And since he's a good guy, and he's all powerful, and he's all knowing, he wouldn't have made the world this way if the world wasn't supposed to be this way. And there's a logic there, you know? Like, you know, why would God have done this if this wasn't the best it could possibly be? And this is obviously a very sort of fundamentally conservative belief. basically says you shouldn't try to change things because you're like f***ing with the natural order as determined by God, and you know, you're basically, you know, f***ing God. And in this book, you know, this guy called Candide goes around and looks at all the ways in which the world is obviously not functioning well. And Candide's professor, a guy in the book called Pangloss, says, well, you know, this is the best of all possible worlds, you know, so don't mess with it. And what I see when I talk to most of the guys I'm talking to who are opposed to wealth taxes, politicians and tax lawyers and phenomenally wealthy people, basically everyone I speak to who's not rich thinks we should tax the rich more. But all of the rich people, including people like Martin Wolf, seem to believe these things, that this is just the way that things should be. And they have all of their rationalizations, such as if you try to change things, it's not going to work. Or, you know, these are perfectly decent people trying to do their best. Wealth taxes are wild and unrealistic. But what you are really seeing, I think, is the same intellectual impulse that we have seen for hundreds of years, which is rich people want to stay rich. So what the fuck are you going to do about it? That brings me to part three of my video, which is the death of democracy, which I think is really the most interesting thing about what Labour is doing here, which is what you have here is a political party that campaigned on not raising taxes and didn't want to raise taxes and won an election on not raising taxes and has then come in and is about to significantly raise taxes, which their voters didn't want them to do and they themselves even didn't want to do. And what does that mean, I think, for democracy? I think this is the consequence of naivety about wealth, right? Which is we now have governments that are very impoverished, presiding over a public which is themselves increasingly impoverished, as the wealth accumulates to a tiny minority which the government refuses to tax. When you understand that that is the structure of society and that wealth continues to flow from the government and from the public to the very rich, what you understand is these governments are, of course, completely powerless. If all of the wealth and all of the power is held by this tiny group, and we refuse to ever... I want to make it clear, this is not just an abstract concept. These guys own the land, these guys own the property, these guys own the businesses, these guys own your mortgage debt, these guys own the government debt. All of the important assets which you need to run your economy are owned by these guys. And if everybody else not only has no wealth, but increasingly is in debt to these people, of course your government will have no options. What you are seeing here in this like loss of wealth of the public and the government and the accumulation of wealth by the very rich, it is really, it's like the X-factorization of democracy, basically. Like you can vote for whichever winner you want and you can have that winner like dance on the stage for you to, you know, things can only get better or whatever, you know. But if they have no wealth and they have no access to wealth, they have no power. So you will end up in these absurd situations that you get in now, where a government promises not to raise taxes, promises to improve the economy, doesn't want to raise taxes, wants to improve the economy, comes in and realises we've got no wealth, we're massively in debt, there's literally nothing we can do except exactly what the rich tell us to do, which is shut down the welfare state, tax ordinary working people, and drive the economy into worse and worse living standards. All right, so part four of this video is what do you do? The first thing to recognise is that this is all a bit shit, isn't it? Like, living standards are going to get worse. In this budget, taxes are going to be raised on higher earning working people. And also, especially if we look at the freezing of the tax thresholds, even lower earning working people. And if you are somebody who has a little bit of excess money, a little bit of discretionary spending, you should obviously tighten your belt a little bit. You should try your best to avoid, stay away from consumerism. But I think it's important to recognise, especially with things like freezing of the tax thresholds, which are raising taxes on even lower earning working people. The income tax comes in at £12,000 a year, which you definitely can't live on. There will be a lot of people in this country who will not have the money to pay this extra tax. And I think it's important to recognise that. If you are somebody who can afford to tighten your belt a little bit, what I want you to do is recognise what is happening here, which is that as wealth is accumulated at the top end of society, more and more people are being squeezed out of wealth ownership completely and are being squeezed into debt. And if nothing is done, what will happen is that squeeze will move further and further and further and further and further up society. It is important that you stand up for those poorer than you now. Otherwise, eventually, you too will be squeezed out. I think this budget could be an opportunity for the middle class and the working class of this country, who are eternally divided by culture and history, to realise the fundamental truth, which is that you guys f***ing need each other. If you, the middle class, do not stand by the working class now, you will be squeezed out as well. I want you to recognise that the situation we are in now, in the UK, in the West, with a decent, sizable middle class of 30% of people who get to live relatively comfortably, is not a historical or international norm. If you do not protect it now, you will lose it, and we will go back to the kind of situation we were in this country 100 years ago, which is still common around the world, where the vast majority of people live in poverty, including you. If you want to fight against this, it really, really requires the middle class and the working class to stand together and demand increased taxation of the very rich. That is the only way for you to protect your financial interests in the long term. All right, last one I've got here is sources of hope, which I hope people have recognised. I try to get into my videos as much as possible, because I don't think we're going to get out of this if we're all depressed. I think there are some things to be hopeful here. First thing is, the argument about taxation of wealth continues to massively grow in popularity, in media salience. People are talking about it more and more and more. I think we have a little bit of a short-term opportunity here. I think there's a very good chance that Labour, who are already very unpopular, and the Keir Starmer leadership, which is already very unpopular, will become significantly more popular, more unpopular after the budget. And I've always said that I think Keir Starmer will probably go, probably after the local elections in May next year. Betting markets are moving that direction as well. Betting markets are starting to think that also that is what probably will happen. At the same time, we've seen the massive growth in the polls of the popularity of the Green Party under the new leadership of Zach Polanski, who very aggressively campaigns for wealth taxes. There is a possibility here that next May or next June, we have a Labour leadership contest in the context of a extremely popular party calling for wealth taxes who are significantly beating Labour in the polls. If that happens, there is a chance, and I'm not saying I think that this will happen, but I do think that we have a chance of this happening, that we get a new Labour leader who realises the only way for Labour to win the next election is to start listening to us on wealth taxes and start helping us design those taxes. We could get that. I'm going to push to get that. I'm going to bring the channel back before that happens so that I think we can be in position to get it. But things can change. Things can definitely change. I want to talk a little bit about history, because there's a couple of graphs here that I think are really interesting that I'm going to flash up. One is the recent debt dynamics of the UK. So how much debt is compared to GDP. We'll flash that up. And what you can see is that UK government debt has increased significantly in the last 20 years, especially during 2008, but especially during COVID. When you look at that graph, you might think, oh, well, we're fucked. UK government's massively in debt. But it's important to recognise that that debt is not to nobody, it's not to aliens. That debt is significantly to the British people. If we tax the wealthy British people, we can get that back. But what I want you to compare that with is this much, much longer term graph of UK government debt. And when you look at that graph, what you see is government debt now is enormously less than what it was in the period after World War II. And what is interesting about that period after World War II, when UK government debt was incredibly high, much higher than it is now, basically because the government had just paid for this incredibly expensive war, that was the period when we saw these unbelievably increased living standards and this incredibly ambitious government that did things like create the NHS and make sure that housing and healthcare and education were basically universally accessible to basically everyone in the country. What that shows you is that large-scale government debt does not stop you from achieving amazing things as a country. But you need to be ambitious, you need to be able to think big, and crucially, you need to be willing to do what the government did at that exact time, which is tax your goddamn rich people. If all of the assets are owned by the rich, you can have a good state and a good country and a good economy and good living standards if you are willing to tax the people who have the assets, the wealth and the power. It's simple as that. And I think, you know, what this longest term graph shows us is that things can get better. Things can get better. You know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. You know, my grandmother was born in London, in the richest city, in the richest country in the world at the time. And three of her siblings died of tuberculosis, which is a disease of poverty. You know, that is what happens in rich countries if you do not manage your distribution. And within 20, 30 years, we had the world that my parents grew up in, where an ordinary person could get an ordinary job and could buy a house and could go on a few holidays and could have a retirement and could raise a family. These things are possible. These things are possible. But it can go either way. You know, if you do not fight that battle about wealth, assets, distribution and tax, then you will not have the resources you need to fight any battle. The key here is whether we stand together, whether we're divided. There's one way this budget can go. The government's going to bring in like 25 different bullshit taxes and we can all start squabbling. Don't tax me, tax my next door neighbour. Or we can all stand together and say, listen, tax the rich. Tax the rich, fix the distribution. And that is going to determine which way this country goes, basically. Yeah, it's a question, I think. It's a question for the British public. Are you going to be able to have compassion with those who are worse off than you? Are you going to stand together and are you going to fight for your rights? Or will you be divided? Listen, stand together. You're going to need each other. We've won before, we can win again. Good luck. This is the last video of the year, hopefully, unless there's some f***ing massive economic collapse or the markets go mental and I have to do another one. I'm done, hopefully. Thank you very much. Just a couple small things. Thank you all for your support. Thanks to everyone on the Patreon. Thanks to everyone who worked on helping us make the channel. I'm on tour in Australia and New Zealand, February, March, if you are one of our Australian or Kiwi viewers. Check it out. I think it's called the People's Economist Tour. And this last thing, it's a bit selfish, but I have found out that my book, The Trading Game, is in contention to be the best-selling non-fiction book of 2025 in the UK. So if you want me to be number one again, then maybe consider this as a Christmas present. Thanks very much. To the government, tax the rich, otherwise it's going to be shit. And to the people, don't rely on them, stand together. Thank you.